The AFEM Industry Insider is brought to you by This Is Distorted, the world's biggest producer and syndicator of electronic music programs and podcasts. For more information, go to thisisdistorted.com or at This Is Distorted on socials. On air, on demand, on brand. This is Distorted. This is the Industry Insider from the Association of Electronic Music.
The AFEM Industry Insider.
Hello, and welcome to the Association for Electronic Music Industry Insider podcast, powered by Distorted. We are the not-for-profit trade body representing electronic music culture and business. As part of our work, we look to promote best practice and provide commentary via our members on the changes to production, distribution, marketing, royalties, streaming, the live sector, and many, many more. However, there's one thread that connects all these different business verticals. The business we work in is a people one, and so health is arguably one of the most important areas we can work in, as we can only succeed in business and art if we are healthy. Last year, we partnered with the master's students in the Arts, Culture, and Media program at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. We started a study to explore the scope of burnout amongst professionals in the dance industry. We surveyed over 1,000 dance music professionals across our membership and externally to see what they understood of burnout and the causes and potential solutions. So we're joined today by four AFEM members who have different backgrounds and expertise in the improvement of physical and mental health for everyone, regardless of their background and their role in the music industry. So I hope this conversation is insightful and we get some actionable takeaways to really help us support each other and minimize the effects of burnout within the industry. I'd like to first welcome Mariana Brandão to the podcast. Mariana, hello, how are you?
Good, thank you, Fim. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Could you tell us a little bit first about your background and your current role?
Sure. So yes, I've been in the music industry 17 years plus, working across multiple roles, advancing shows, tours, managing artists. You know, worked with big festivals, Creamfields, Pasha, artists like Fatboy Slim, Piton, Paul Van Dyk. I kind of shifted more into the wellness industry about 4 or 5 years ago. And I've been studying since. So I've got, currently I run GM Wellness, which is my own wellness hub, I would say. We provide coaching sessions, fitness training, nutrition programs. I'm a coach myself, and I specialize more like in the habit, mindset, and performance field for businesses and individuals.
Amazing. That's a very kind of interesting area that you're in, and I'm interested to kind of understand a bit more about like mindset coaching, for example, and how that might address issues of burnout. What does mindset coaching entail, I guess?
Yeah, so I mean, mindset and habits. So I basically help clients to implement daily habits, routines, and to break like their day into like chunks, let's say, right? So they don't get overwhelmed with that, because burnout, nothing is for me, is like you feel too overwhelmed, right? And I normally, when I work with clients, I realize that, well, I had a burnout, so I'm talking for experience as well. So, you know, it's normally when you've got a lack of organization in your day, more so than anything else, because at the end of the day, I find that we all have time. What we lack is like time management skills. And therefore, you know, that leads to burnout. So that's normally how I kind of, you know, coach and help my clients.
And is that in conjunction with the fitness aspect as well?
Yeah, well, you know, so my business partner, DM, she's a fitness trainer. So we basically, you know, mind and body is like, you know, we are in harmony, needs to be in harmony, you know. And I think there is a misconception of that we all work in desks these days, but we're not made to work in desks all day, sitting and not moving at all. So whatever that is that you like to do, you know, we were born to move, you know. So fitness is very much related to that. And also moving helps us to reduce like stress, you know, to bring oxygen to our body cells. That's lots of benefits from moving. So it's very much connected.
That was actually one of the stats that surprised me the most from the report we did with the university. We asked the question, what kind of things can you do to prevent burnout. Number one was set clear boundaries. Number two, in terms of popularity, was physical health. And number three was friends and family. So physical health was above seeing friends and family. And personally, I found that quite surprising. I think the electronic industry is quite a hedonistic at times industry. So for physical health to be so high was surprising. When people come to you, are they often thinking about fitness, or is it purely, I'm feeling burned out, what do I do?
Yeah, normally no. Now I'm like working with companies, and the companies have been addressing that earlier on, like, you know, focusing on the employees' mindset. But I find the individuals normally, when they come to you, is that they are absolutely burnt out already in that stage, that we've got to kind of go back to basics and work, like, you know, backwards almost. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I wasn't really into fitness until like about 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason that I got into that is because I start coaching myself. And I remember the coach told me the first time that we spoke, you've got to move. I mean, I was like, you know, traveling and moving, that sense, like touring, right? But I suppose never really looking into that. And if you look in any kind of treatments as well for, let's say, even cancer, right? Normally they, you know, what they change first is like diet, and then is movement, is literally bringing oxygen to the cells and moving. So if you research the basics recovering, methods, working out is going to be amongst the top three of them. So let's do that before we get ill, right? And prevent.
That's it. Yeah, prevention is better than cure. And yeah. of the clients you see, like, how often does burnout come up? Do you think they understand what we mean by burnout, or are they just feeling stressed and looking for help and not calling it that in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, burnout also, right? It's like a major reflection of neglection. So when you neglect yourself, right, and you prioritize everything around you but yourself, that is gonna pretty much, you know, go to a burnout, I would say. Well, when I had my burnout, I basically did not look after myself at all. I didn't think I was important because I prioritized all my clients and all the DJs and all the tourings and everything. And I also thought that it was gonna, like, working for 12, 14 hours a day was a good thing. Because I think, you know, society is like, you know, being busy is great, you know? If you are busy, you are successful. And it took me to have a major burnout, like hospital surgery burnout, to actually realize that that's not the normal, you know? Like, we've got to have breaks. We've got to have time to look after yourself. You know, being extremely busy is not cool in that sense of like burning out. That's what I mean. I think now people are starting to realize more that, because there are more talks about mental health and well-being than we had a few years ago, right? People didn't really talk about this, like, even before COVID, I would think. People didn't not really talk about that. Kind of, these conversations became more public after we went through COVID, and everyone realized that they were burned out.
I think that's it. And I think also that's why we want to, like, commit time to it as an association, because we recognize that the pressure is immense on the industry. And I think normalizing breaks and boundaries and essentially actions you can take to prevent burnout is a really important part for protecting the industry that we love. Do you think there's a specific problem the electronic industry specifically has because of the late nights, or the amount of flights, or are we particularly bad for it, do you think, than maybe other businesses that you work with?
Well, I mostly work with music businesses anyway, right? But not only electronic, but, like, you know, I'm kind of consulting for a PR music company now. So I do work still in the music industry, but more in this, the wellness. And as I say, businesses are more, I wouldn't say concerned, but they do want to bring more wellness activities and, you know, coaches, and, you know, they are doing like these wellness days to their companies and all of that. I didn't have that. I don't think we had that back when we were working for those businesses, right? So, you know, I think that there is a major kind of misconception when it comes to for my time, it was like, you know, you just have to power through. That was the advice. Just power through, right? Especially, I think, in the electronic music industry, yes, it's super hard. All of the music, but, you know, my background is electronic as well. So just like, you know, 12 years touring, I didn't realize how much, you know, how many times I had burnouts, just because you don't have a day off. I didn't have holiday. I didn't have a weekend in 12 years. And, you know, the first time that, like, when COVID hit and I actually, you know, stopped, I was like, what is going on? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, I didn't have a weekend in like a decade. What's going, it's crazy, you know? I think now it's slightly better than it was when I was doing it, because people are talking more about that, you know, and this, but you just don't have, you don't have like 9-to-5 roles in the music industry. So it's tough too.
Yeah, and we can't change that. The hours will always be what they will be, but I think it's about building into that understanding about time. And maybe we'll touch on that with some of our other speakers. I mean, do you have any kind of thoughts on leaving us with one recommendation or a piece of advice or something that you think about with respect to burnout that, like, you think the audience should know about?
Yeah, so I mean, one tip that I always kind of, you know, tell my everyone that I coach is build daily habits. You know, people underestimate the power of habits. That's why I also focus in like, you know, my coaching kind of strategy. You know, it doesn't matter if that is waking up a little bit earlier, doing meditation, journaling, or, you know, yoga, working out, whatever it is that works for you, because it's not the same for everyone. Obviously, that's why, you know, I do tailored programs. But build habits and prioritize your health, you know, because if you're not taking time for to look after yourself and prioritize everything else, that day will come, you know, and whatever is in your mind will manifest in your physical body at some point, you know, which was what happened to me. So if you are facing all that massive, huge stress levels, that will definitely impact your, you know, physical health at some point.
I love that. Building in daily routines is a really important aspect. And yeah. I think there's some great takeaways from that. That's amazing. Thank you for speaking with us today, Mariana.
Thank you so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to speak to Alexandra Williamson. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi.
How are you
apologies,
today?
Apologies, my camera is frozen, so I've just turned it off.
No problem. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and your current role?
Absolutely. So I started a company called Blue Rhythm, which specializes in providing mental health support to individuals and businesses across the creative industries. And then I also am the health co-chair for Association for Electronic Music.
Fantastic. Thank you. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, like, your thoughts on the term burnout, your interpretation of it. Do you think that having a label like burnout separate to anxiety or depression, which can incorporate aspects of burnout, is helpful in your opinion?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a personal opinion. I find labels helpful in terms of, you know, when you're speaking to someone and trying to explain kind of what you're experiencing, it might be a lot easier to say, you know, I'm having symptoms of burnout or I'm feeling burnt out, rather than having to kind of list, you know, a long list of symptoms. And in the same way, you know, anxiety, depression, et cetera, are mental health conditions, and burnout isn't, I guess, technically classified as a mental health condition, but as you've mentioned, all of these things can overlap. So you can experience, you know, a state of burnout and also be quite anxious or be feeling quite low and whatnot. And so I think having that label helps people understand what you're experiencing. And I also think it helps legitimize your experience.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I think labels can be interpretive as well. So one person's experience can differ, but they can still share the same label. And I think the more that we're able to talk about it and normalize that, I think some people, in my experience, perhaps have said, you know, they felt burnout because it's felt more socially acceptable perhaps than depression maybe. But actually, I think they should all be widely accepted. But burnout, I think, maybe helps to incorporate both physical and mental symptoms. And some of those were kind of outlined in the results of the survey. You had physical symptoms like pain in your stomach, for example, and then psychological symptoms as well. So I found that to be quite an interesting encapsulation. One of the things I was interested in, and I certainly experienced this, is do you think there are barriers to getting access to therapy or counselling within the industry? I mean, where do you begin if you feel like it's something that you might benefit from?
Absolutely. I think in terms of barriers and getting access to therapy, what we've seen over the years is it's incredibly difficult for people to get access to therapy for a variety of reasons. But I think, you know, whether you're looking at the creative industries as a whole or specifically at the music industry, you have kind of so many obstacles at play, because you'll either have someone who, you know, predominantly works in the music industry and they identify themselves as an artist, a DJ, et cetera, but most of the time they'll have to have another job in addition to, you know, supplement their income. And so you have a large percentage of the workforce that isn't classified as employees and therefore don't have any access or entitlement to benefits. So if they don't have access to support through their employer, then that's already making it more difficult. Then you add on top of that, you know, all of the difficulties we've had post-Brexit, post-COVID, you know, how touring has become increasingly expensive. So then you have so many people who are struggling, but they're already having to work multiple jobs in order to support themselves, and they don't have extra disposable income to put towards therapy. So you just kind of, it's a very kind of difficult situation in and of itself, just accessing it on, like, I guess, a financial side of things. But then you also have, you know, the stigma. As much awareness as we've raised and as much good change has come, it's, you know, continues to be extremely difficult for people to, you know, either admit to themselves or admit to, you know, people they are close to that they're struggling, because often it feels like a personal failure, even though it isn't. And what you just mentioned on, you know, your friends and colleagues are more likely to maybe say they're experiencing burnout rather than depression. It's, you know, it's that stigma, and it's really, I think, difficult for people to kind of make the move and speak to someone if they aren't able to identify exactly what they're struggling with. If I think the problem that we see most of the time is people wait until they hit a breaking point or a point of crisis. And that's, I think, why we're seeing a lot in the survey findings that, you know, there was quite a high percentage of people who identified with experiencing burnout. And I think that's, you know, part of the reason.
Yeah, the part that I found really interesting was we asked the question, are you an industry professional, an artist, or both? And there was a large portion that clicked both. And I think over a third. And so for me, that says that there's lots of people, you know, wearing multiple hats. And part of the, I think, the outcomes of the survey that we looked at were like, what kind of systemic or cultural changes do we need to address? And one of them, I suppose, is there's this element of competition, right? You want to be seen as being at the top of your game, and exposing yourself up to that vulnerability, I think, is a real challenging aspect. Within your work, have you found that it's the people that are doing multiple jobs and trying to balance both being an artist and a professional within the background at the same time is struggling the most with their mental health, perhaps?
Trying to think of, I mean, I suppose that if you are, you know, balancing multiple roles, then it's, you know, I guess generally more likely that you might be struggling with mental health a bit more, perhaps. But I'm hesitant to say, you know, definitively that, you know, a certain group of people struggle more or less. I think what I found quite interesting, like when you're speaking about the survey, was a lot of the responses about, like how many people, I can't remember the exact percentage, but how many people said that they're experiencing burnout, but then they didn't really know what to do about it. And it was like, you had a large percentage of people who were able to say, yes, I experienced symptoms of burnout, or yes, I would consider myself burnt out. But then it was like, where do we go from here? How do we address this? How do we improve it? And as much as I kind of don't like the narrative of we need to raise awareness, et cetera, because I like to see, you know, actionable change being taken rather than, you know, more conversations. I actually found it quite interesting that I reverted against myself when I was reading kind of those survey results. And I realized very clearly that I think a lot of people are very unaware on what burnout is and are very unaware of what to do if they are experiencing burnout. I realize that kind of went on a tangent away from your question, but
no, yeah. It's fascinating, and it does touch on something I wanted to bring up with you actually. And one of the stats that I found shocking was, I think 32% were not sure if they had burnout or experienced burnout. Mm. And I was amazed at that, because if you've already started a survey on burnout, presumably you've got a base experience or knowledge on that. So mm-hmm. for me, that was one of the more surprising stats to come out of it. Like, you're not sure if you've experienced burnout, but you're obviously not entirely unreflective, because you've taken the time to complete the survey. So I think that's something that's come out of it. And it's kind of why I wanted to begin with, like, can you define burnout really? And is it helpful to define it? Because for people unsure, that strikes me as a cohort of the membership and the public that we have to help. We have to talk about, this is what burnout is. It's a spectrum. And here are some things you can take away that hopefully support you. Do you think it's particularly unique to the electronic industry, or do you think it's very widespread? And are there any nuances that you think our sector faces?
I think whether it's burnout specifically or other mental health conditions, the music industry, and particularly the electronic music industry, you know, people within those roles, I think, you know, there are unique challenges, there are triggers, and kind of what you touched on before, a lot of those are unfortunately out of your control. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the long working hours, and particularly the late hours. To make it even worse, you have the difficulty with the work-life balance. But I also think one of the kind of most staggering things I've seen and heard people talk about is the amount of kind of gray area, because it's so unclear, you know, what is work and what is play. And, you know, whether you're going to a music industry conference, or you're at a gig, or you're invited to some sort of event and you're invited through your work, but you're also expected to drink in front of your colleagues. And, you know, there's just so much like difficulty kind of navigating these different spaces. And I think when you have all these factors happening and they're kind of all out of your control, I think it's a lot more likely that you might end up getting burnt out, because there's just not a clear, you know, what Mariana touched on earlier is like, there aren't very clear boundaries. So as much as you want to be able to set those boundaries in order to help, you know, reduce feelings of burnout, you're working in an industry where the boundaries are very unclear. So I think that's a bit difficult. And I think also another thing that, you know, I've noticed, and I don't think the survey specifically touched on this aspect, but I think other ones have, is that the electronic music industry specifically has a large percentage of people who consider themselves either, you know, officially diagnosed or self-diagnosed as neurodiverse. And I see so many more people recently taking kind of the label of burnout a step further and talking about, you know, neurodivergent burnout specifically. And so I think that's kind of not necessarily unique, but I find that a larger percentage of the electronic music industry specifically is experiencing what they call like neurodivergent burnout. And I think that's kind of an important thing to highlight and try and help people realize, and then figure out, you know, how to address it and improve it.
Yeah, that sounds like a definite area for future work potentially for AFM to explore. That's really interesting. And then finally, could you leave us with one recommendation, tip, or something to reflect on after this podcast has ended about burnout?
I mean, it's a bit generalized, but I think that it helps in the long run if you can find a trusted person to speak with that kind of represents a safe space for you. And I don't think it really matters at the end of the day if that person is, you know, a certified counselor, or if that's a close family, friend, colleague, etc. I think if you can find someone that, you know, puts you in a place where you feel safe and you can speak very openly and honestly, that gets you a lot further in then, you know, taking the next step in, you know, whether it's finding professional support or, you know, building those daily habits, etc. I think sometimes it's very hard to be honest with yourself about what you're experiencing. And for a lot of people, admitting that you are burnt out feels like a personal failure, even though it isn't. So I think that the more you can have those open and honest conversations, the closer you'll get to getting the support, taking the steps to get yourself better. That would just be kind of general, whether it's burnout or other mental health conditions, is, you know, finding a safe space to explore those feelings.
That's incredible. And I think you also touched on the aspect of setting boundaries as well. And that, I think, is another really key kind of takeaway that I got from speaking with you there. Thank you so much, Alexandra. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Next up, we're going to speak to Belinda Matwale. Good afternoon, Belinda. How are you?
Hi, Finley. I was going to say good morning because I'm in Brazil, so I'm in a different time zone to everyone else, which is quite normal in the music industry. But yeah, this is a great conversation and thanks for inviting me to be part of it.
No problem. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and your current role?
Sure. I've been in wellness for 15 years. I've trained as a nutritional therapist, a meditation teacher. I've trained in trauma-informed psychotherapy with Dr. Gabor Mate and finished a mentorship with him. Prior to this, I worked in investment banking, and that's where burnout also happens. And I now work at Listen Up Therapy, which is a company I started with my husband, who's a DJ, Matthew Benjamin, known as Bushwhacker. We started the company, I think, around 6 or 7 years ago. And we also specialize in creating support for people in creative industries through therapy. We offer mentoring, which is kind of a blend of coaching and therapy. And then we have coaching as well. And I do meditation with electronic music. So I teach at festivals and I also run retreats around the world. So lots of travel, lots of organization. And I find all these skills are really supportive with the clients I'm working with in the music industry.
That's incredible. And I didn't know you were in investment banking beforehand. I mean, I'm interested.
That's a lot of stress. You're working 24/7. So I do think that, you know, even as a nutritionist, talking about adrenal fatigue, 15 years ago, people were like, it's woo-woo, the doctors wouldn't accept it. We were doing cortisol tests with clients, with patients, to see where they are kind of on that spectrum of you're just stressed versus a physiological burnout. So there are actual things you can do to see in the body, because of course mental stress affects our body. It's called psychoneuroimmunology. It affects our adrenal glands and how we produce cortisol. And you know, you can get to a point where your adrenal glands are doing an irregular wave of cortisol where you're like wired at night but can't get up in the morning. And then you can also get to a point where they're just really struggling to squirt out any cortisol. So yeah, I think, you know, looking at that, you can categorize it in a way. And that's why looking at diet and nutrition is also really important. I have had some clients who, you know, might be doing the multiple jobs that Alexandra was just talking about, and they're running a label and wanting to put music out and then wanting to organize events. And they come to me and they're like, wow, I don't have any like fuel left in the tank at the end of the day. But when I ask them about how they're starting their day, it might be like 7 coffees and not eating food till later. And again, I don't want to overgeneralize because everything needs to be done individually, but like that is also not supporting your body. That is really setting yourself up for stress, anxiety, and a physiological burnout.
And that's, I guess, when, you know, you talked about the chemical reactions happening in the body around stress. How would they manifest themselves in symptoms that you would see in your clients? Is it skin rashes? Is it senses of dread about the day starting? Like, what kind of manifestations do you see from those sorts of reactions?
I think it can be, yeah, people generally feeling like a tired or malaise and unexplained. But, you know, back to what you just said, it does start so much with the mind. So I think this is a really interesting topic to unpack as opposed to the other physical symptoms, because just an imagined experience, because I work a lot with performance anxiety with artists, just imagining something going wrong, the body doesn't know whether that's real or not. So it has the same biochemical pathway of stress being created. And I think this is where mindset, looking at our beliefs, a lot of people I work with, whether they're a very established artist or someone who's starting out, there's very common beliefs of not wanting to say no. And I think that stems of not being enough, not wanting to disappoint someone, you know, a lack of self-confidence, even for people that are very, very successful. When we go back to their childhood, it might be like, wow, I was too shy or too scared to say no to anyone. And now that is still replaying out and getting them into trouble. So I think it's this really interesting, nuanced conversation of, yes, like, what is the environment of the industry that we're in, but also what is the internal environment for each of us, and how is that creating burnout? Because I do see this a lot, especially this dialogue of I'm not enough, because that is what leads people to say yes to everything in a competitive environment. It's like, what if I say no? My whole career is going to be over. Sorry, there's a helicopter flying overhead. Or I had a client recently in Medellin, and he was doing his first event, and he's like, I've got to go out every single night to be in the community so people can see me, so they'll come to my event. Like, if I don't go to theirs, they're not going to come to mine. And of course, creating community is important, but he was really overdoing it, and he was not sleeping, and he was getting really tired, and like, you're not going to have anything left in the tank for when it's your big day and event, and you've got to manage the artists and the staff and everything that's going on. So I think the internal environment's really important. And something else I'm seeing a lot that we haven't touched on yet is how this internal environment and burnout leads to drug and substance abuse, because I'm also seeing this a lot, especially at the moment with ketamine. I'm working with a lot of young producers, and they have a narrative that I'm feeling burnt out in the studio. I'm not as creative as I want to be. I'm going to have some ketamine and then, you know, make music. And I think we all know, like, that might work synthetically for a short amount of time. And then they're just sitting in the studio alone, not doing anything, you know, leaving a night out with friends that was really enjoyable to go home and sit in the studio being alone. So yeah, I just think this conversation though of like, what are we doing internally? Yes, the music industry is challenging, but I don't want to feed into too much of a victim stance of like, I'm in the music industry, so I'm going to have all these issues. We need to come back to a little bit more self-empowerment, you know, which links into what Mariana was saying about how are we organizing our day? How are we taking control? Because ultimately it's up to us when we say a yes or a no, or what we allow to happen to us within the industry.
I think that's a lot of fascinating points there, and I'm glad that you touched on some of the issues around substance abuse as well, especially as we see alternative therapies like ketamine therapy, for example, and that can be misused in the wrong ways potentially. So it's an interesting area that I think needs more industry-wide conversation around. And I think I was reflecting on your kind of references there to the internal state and the internal self. And I've often spoken to someone like Alexandra mentioned, a confidant, that's felt amazing. And then, you know, a week later, I'm feeling back in the space that I was before. And I suppose one of the things that is really interesting about the work that you do is around meditation and nutrition, because that is self-led once you're taught it by professionals and you understand what you're doing. How much of that do you think is going to be critical to the industry preventing burnout and learning skill sets like that to take forward and utilize as a kind of toolkit, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it's essential. I mean, you look at any CEO, any entrepreneur across industries, they all talk about nutrition, diet, exercise. I think the issue a lot of people have with meditation, you know, I've studied meditation for 15 years, is that someone can be in this burnt out state, and if someone tells them, I'll just go and meditate, it's like Marie Antoinette's thing, go and eat cake. If someone's already in such a hyper state, they need preparation before that. So just briefly, even in the yogic world, meditation was not taught to the monks in the beginning. They had to go through a lot of lifestyle initiations before that, in terms of how they relate to other people, as well as diet and exercise. And then they'd learn meditation. So of course today, that's why, you know, we do recommend this like coaching therapy, because what are the thought loops going on in the mind that we want to kind of unravel a bit for meditation? But also active meditation is really helpful. So this is what I do with the electronic music meditation that I teach at festivals and with all my students. We do a lot of somatic exercises before and breath work to help process and dissolve, I guess I'm trying to find the right word, the anxiety. We don't want to say the fizzy anxiety in the body is bad and I'm trying to like breathe it away. It's more we're trying to meet it and allow it to digest in the body. So meditation is also very individual. I mean, all these things are. So it's about trying different techniques, trying different breath works that work for you. So if someone's listening and they're like, yeah, I've tried meditation and it doesn't work for me, try some different teachers. There's so many things on Insight Timer and YouTube, all for free. I've got a ton of stuff up there. But then this does become a, you know, a daily practice. And I think it's just starting with whatever makes you feel connected. At the end of the day, I think burnout, I think Mariana was saying this as well, it's like when we're not connected to ourselves. And as creatives, as musicians, I think we do our best creative work when we are in touch with what's happening with us. Whether, and this is not about being zen all day, it's like whether you're going through a breakup and you write music about it, or you're angry and you know you do a creative process with that, or you're just creating some space for ideas to come in. I think, you know, meditation helps so much with creativity, but often the monkey mind's like, I need to be in the studio more hours, I need to be out more hours. And, you know, when people having creative blocks, I'm like, really try and create some white space in your day. Your best ideas often come when you're in the shower or going for a walk. And it's the same with meditation. I think I'm seeing a lot more artists now, even like starting to merge over into the functional music place, because they're meditating and they're like, wow, I want to create music for meditation. Yeah, so I just think it's not a luxury, or I wish I had time for that. It's just an essential if you really want to be in the music industry.
I think it's one of the strange frictions that we currently find ourselves in. We're in a kind of society where if you're not constantly busy, then you're not hustling hard enough, and therefore your artistic career might struggle. But by the very definition of creativity, you need to have space and time to make accidents and experiment and try things out. And those two things are in some ways kind of deeply opposed, but they're the creativity side and the spare time to, I guess, express yourself is how we get good music. It's why we have dance floors. So it's an
exactly
incredibly important part.
I think the overworking narrative that sometimes can be sourced from I'm not enough, so I need to do more. You know, Gabor Mate talks about that a lot. He's like, I wish I didn't work so much, but I was doing it to feel enough, to prove myself. So I think a lot of people carry this narrative. And I also love Rick Rubin and his discussions about creativity, which is also about, you know, doing things that you love. I think people get tired and burnt out when they're like, are other people going to like this? Is it good enough? And that just destroys the whole creative process. It's like, go in the studio and do things that bring you joy and passion. I think one of the antidotes to burnout is also like, what's your why? Why are you doing this? When has it gone from being joyful to being stressful? And that's another kind of responsibility that we can take for ourselves.
That's fantastic. And I'm very inspired by that. Thank you so much. Is there a takeaway that you would like the audience to think about or reflect upon post this podcast?
I think, yeah, just tuning into your inner landscape, tuning into your why, and remembering that creativity comes in cycles. You're not a machine. So, you know, you might go into the studio and play and noodle around every day, but it doesn't always have to be making the track that is going to, you know, be the highlight of your career. Just remember to have fun with the creative process.
Thank you so much, Belinda. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Finley.
Now I would like to welcome Louisa Pilo to the conversation. Louisa, how are you?
I'm good. I just got like a rush of I'm really excited. I was a little anxious to go last, and now because everybody's had so much great stuff to say, I'm actually I'm excited to like bring it home.
Fantastic. That's great to hear. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your current role?
Absolutely. So yeah, I've been in the music industry for 20 years as a DJ and a performer and an artist, and then also a label head. And kind of concurrent with that journey, I've been in long-term recovery from substance abuse, which kind of informed my choice of side hustles, which is consent educator. So it's really exciting to have an opportunity to kind of bring those skills to the table in this context, especially talking about burnout prevention.
That's fantastic. And maybe you could talk a little bit about what you mean by consent, because when I first heard it, I definitely had misunderstandings of it, because I think just from lack of exploring what it means. And actually, the more that I looked into it, the more I realized that consent is actually intrinsic to burnout prevention. So could you just kind of tell the listeners a little bit about how you see consent and what that entails?
Can I? So, you know, I think a lot of our conversations about consent is actually so what it's not is like not just for sex ed, it's not about perfectionism, it's not a tool of punishment, it's not always somebody else's responsibility to like respect my consent, because how is somebody going to respect my consent if I can't respect my own consent and advocate for myself? Like we heard Belinda especially talking a lot about agency, and I think that's a really important part of it. And also it's not always the most important thing, but in remembering that, like when I say it's not the most important thing, like I got sober via an intervention, which was definitely not consensual and definitely saved my life, you know? So what is consent for me? It's like a practice or a lens that is kind of an ongoing skill building process. It's non-binary, so it's not black and white. It's embodied. Like we heard a lot about kind of somatics and how we take care of ourselves in that way by listening to our bodies. And that's kind of the kind of consent I teach. And then we take those skills and apply them to relationships so I can help support others' consent. Sorry, a bird just flew into my window. Anyway, and I think it is also very consciousness shifting. So when I start to kind of integrate these skills, I start to have a new experience of the world, including kind of in my personal experience, moving from the feeling of burning out to a feeling of like creative flourishing, because I suddenly give myself a little bit more room to breathe. And that's what I really try and I think it's important to also focus on that we're not just here for triage. You know, a lot of the conversation that we've been having in this roundtable, I guess, has been about like not only, you know, kind of creating pathways to healing and treating this ongoing problem, but also like what's on the other side of that hill is ideally something that feels like robust and inspired and supported, and that, you know, that in turn not only will affect my creative practices, but also my like industry ecosystem, which I think is really exciting.
Belinda touched on it in the last conversation about, you know, the artist that was working lots and lots of hours. And one of the things that was kind of shocking to me, it was 23% of the survey respondents worked between 60 to 70 hours a week or more. And that's nearly a quarter. That felt very, very high. And, you know, when I think about your work, it then led me to wonder, have they consented to work those hours, or is it, as Alexander was saying, the blurring of lines where are you still working, or have you now gone to a gig for entertainment? Is that a big part of your work where you're talking about consent through the framework of permission to say yes or no in a professional context where there's not an immediate downside to saying no, but there might be longer term, i.e. you're not burned out?
I mean, I think that like right now, and it's actually super exciting, we're kind of going through an industry-wide shift post-COVID, as a couple other people touched on, that like we are kind of forced to reconcile our realistic limitations. And it's uncomfortable, you know, because it's like going back to the old ways or feels kind of impossible. And I think that brings up a lot of kind of what I would refer to as like a hard no in the body, like what used to be possible is no longer functioning, you know. And I think also that feeling of like, you know, the pressure to perform if I am constantly overriding my own capacities, there, like, I will get burnt out. Like, there's no other path. Like, that's what will happen. So by kind of, and I think a lot of us, I know certainly I kind of, when I started doing this work, I was very outside my body, as I think a lot of people, like, you know, again, substance abuse was mentioned here, like abuse, substance abuse, addiction, alcoholism. And when I say addiction, it also includes workaholism, you know, that like none of these things will make it, like if I'm actively participating in my addiction, I will not be able to be in my body and respond to its needs. And so I will not be able to kind of respond to my own consent. And then I will wind up on, like, at the end of that night or that week or that year or that decade, feeling like an old sponge. And so I think, I don't remember the beginning of your question. Can you repeat it?
I think you've answered it, because it was really about how consent works in a professional sense and saying yes or no to professional opportunities. And then you then touched on that aspect of workaholism. And you talked about being in your body. And I think it's really interesting, because I think sometimes the demographic that needs to hear these messages the most are not necessarily from this particular space. There are people that work at labels or agencies or management companies. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm in my body all the time. So is there anything you can do to, like, I want to try and bridge the cultural gap, if you will, and try and impart some of the knowledge we have here to people that haven't thought about this space previously. So when you say in your body, do you mean just centering yourself and reflecting on what you think? Is that what you mean by that phrase?
I mean, I think this, as I mentioned, this is really a skill building. It takes time to build consent fluency, and that time requires some mistakes. Right? That, like, the path towards kind of, I think, healing in this area, it often means overshooting the mark, or like overriding my own boundaries and starting to feel what that feels like. So if I don't like how I feel, I can kind of look at the choices that I made that got me into the position that I'm in, right? And so if that included, like, no sleep, no food, no water, loud music, saying yes to every opportunity. Because, and again, I think also it's important that you talk, sorry, I'm going fast because I'm really excited. That's getting in my body, even though it's uncomfortable. Yeah. I think it's important that we mention demographics when we're talking about this stuff. A, because certain marginalized populations, and again, like, I don't think it necessarily matters where you are within the industry, but I notice a lot that femmes, people of color, folks in queer communities, neurodivergent people, as was mentioned, are more prone to burnout because there's, like, scarcity mentalities, that there's only so much room at the top, there's fear of missing out, there's imposter syndrome, there's, like, milking culture, which is like Melinda was talking about, like, strike while the iron's hot. There's a lot of precarity. Like Alexandra was mentioning, like, people have, you know, 2 to 3 jobs minimum to be able to kind of work in this industry. And also, you know, not to mention, like, literally all of history building a strong case for why you can't say no to any opportunity that comes your way. You know, I think kind of speaking to that, we also must mention that, like, the idea of self-care, while it's been kind of co-opted by, like, a capitalist toilet, actually has, like, deep anti-racist roots, and that, that's like, I took notes. Audre Lorde, Black queer feminist, is quoted as saying, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare. You know, to build a baseline that allows us to do our work in a way that feels, like, robust and supported is really, it's important. And then I would say, like, kind of what I know you asked about, like, what do I mean by being in your body? And I think by being in my body, I would say, it's really difficult to honor your embodied consent if you don't know what yes and no feels like in your body. So I think sometimes even just asking, like, let's say I have an offer for a gig And instead of responding right away, because I think I have to say yes, because like, oh my God, somebody wants me to do something that I love for money. I can also be like, you know, take a beat and be like, okay, so what does the travel look like? Oh, it's two layovers. And this is like a little bit less than my normal rate, because even though there's like a 8-hour travel time, you know, like I can start to like make decisions for my future self. So I don't end up like crying in an airport at 6 a.m., which is a realistic issue that I've come across on numerous occasions. And then
I mean, 40% of the respondents indicated that they travel more than 40 hours a month for their job. So that travel thing is very real. There's a famous quote where I think the DJ said, oh, I DJ for free, you pay me to get on the plane and travel. And it's that sort of analogy, the emotional and psychological labor of getting on a plane, changing time zones, dealing with those people in transit, I think is a big part of that and leading to burnout.
Absolutely, especially because I think one thing that separates the electronic music industry from many other industries, even within the kind of music space, is that it's often super solitary. And I think that kind of moving around the world without feeling connected to your community or even your family is really hard on the nervous system. So kind of being able to zoom out a little bit and away from this idea of like, I know I've struggled a lot earlier in my career with this, like the should, like I should feel grateful. I shouldn't complain because I get to do what I want with my life. Like this is my goal. This is my dream, you know, since I was like 16 or something to get to do this work. And that doesn't mean it's not hard. And it doesn't mean that my capacity is limitless. So being able to kind of honor the fact that like sometimes, my wants and my needs move in different directions. Like my wants are to be able to show up like a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for every single gig I get offered. And my needs are a certain amount of money and a certain amount of support and caring for my body and my nervous system. And, you know, sometimes I think also saying no is really scary, especially if you're a member of marginalized populations. And so kind of being able to practice saying no in safe environments, like with a team that you know supports you, or even to friends, if like, I'm sorry, I can't go out tonight, I am wiped out. Like this is all skill building. We will not be perfect at it at first, especially if we have like histories of kind of being people pleasers, which I think a lot of us do, because that's kind of a lot of what it takes to get to a certain level of this industry, is just like suiting up and showing up without complaint. But, you know, as our schedules fill up and as ideally our skills get more in demand, we can start to, you know, advocate a little bit more for our needs, hopefully.
I think that's a really kind of salient point. And I think I also, you know, you talked about the communities that you want to reach because you think they're impacted the most by things like burnout. And that I also think about, and part of the reason that this is a free podcast is because I don't think people with two or three jobs are necessarily going to music conferences or having access to private therapy. So I think pointing to free resources is a really important aspect of what our role is. And I also think as a trade body, it doesn't really belong to me or anyone that works for AFIM, it belongs to the members. And so we touched on in the survey about cultural or systemic changes that we could make to try and support the prevention of burnout, things like normalizing more vacation time, for example, as a cultural change. Is there anything that you would ask AFIM or the wider industry to get behind and talk about as it relates to this topic so that we can try and see some of those cultural systemic changes?
I mean, I live in France, which is a small miracle as an American where we don't even have healthcare. Because in France, they have a status called intermittent de spectacle, which means that I essentially have DJ unemployment. And on slow months, the government actually pays me because they believe that culture is worth paying for. And it's an intermittent, like a gig economy, which is like incredible. And they also, because it's France, like you can submit for congé spectacle, which is like your vacation as a performer, which is like if every country could offer this to its creators and performers, that would be incredible. But because that's not the case, I think, you know, certain industry bodies like Music Cares has a really great system of supporting its musicians, is especially if you're in America, obviously. And then I think AFEM's wealth of resources is really exciting, because like if you need support, there will most likely be somebody within the body to be able to support or to offer their services and work something out. You know, I think that like people are members of the Association for Electronic Music because they want to be associated with positive cultural change, and that's really exciting. And then I also think that, like, as was mentioned, like, unfortunately, we live in a society and we live in reality, and adjusting ourselves to the reality of like, there's no one coming to save us. We have to do this work ourselves. It's like, on one level it sucks, but on another level it offers like a pathway to liberation and to kind of creating systems of support for ourselves and for each other that I think can be really, really empowering. Because it's like, one of my questions here is like, whose responsibility is it to create pathways to healing? And like it or not, it's ours. So here we are.
And what that healing looks like is going to be different for every person. Everyone struggles with different components of that, I suppose. And that's why it needs to be like for us, by us, essentially, because it's going to be unique to everyone's individual circumstances. The Music Care things is interesting, and it's something that one of our team mentioned recently. What would a Music Cares for the electronic industry look like? And could we have a role in exploring that? So that's an interesting kind of thing to think about, I think, in terms of community support. And a lot of what we do, I want it to reach as many people as possible. It's not just about supporting members, it's supporting where anyone that makes, listens, or dances to electronic music. That's part of why we're here. Is there anything you would like to leave us with as a parting gift, a recommendation, a tip, or a reflection around burnout, Louisa?
Yeah, I mean, I think in moments where it's not possible to say no, or as we're building our saying no skills to things that are outside of our capacities or beyond our what we would like to be doing in that moment, that could feel kind of like they push us towards burnout, I think this idea of grounding in bigger picture of like, why am I doing what I'm doing, right, can be super helpful. And if especially that can help me make choices that are really aligned with my values and aligned with my goals. So I can say like, I don't particularly like being at this club at 5 a.m. and I would like to go home, please, thank you. But I want to be here supporting my community members, and I want to be made like, to kind of balance the idea of like, I can't do this, I have no capacity, I should go home, with the idea of like, for a bigger picture, I'm willing to take this one for the team and then, you know, balance that out later. I think it's important to kind of have both sides, right?
That's amazing. Thank you. That's a very positive note to end on, I think. I'd like to thank Alexandra, Mariana, Louisa, and Belinda for joining us today. This has been the Association for Electronic Music Insider Industry Podcast. Thank you to Distorted also for helping us to produce this. I just like to say that we will leave links to everyone's services and who they are in the description of this podcast, wherever you're listening to it. There's also a tab on our website that links to free mental health support and resources. Additionally, if you are an AFEM member, you can get access to Health Assured, who can provide free access to therapy and counselling. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
The Association for Electronic Music presents
Industry Insider.